I'm going to say a few words and then take questions or comments, and then we will close our time together by doing another sit with the perspective that came from questions and all. When I talk about how natural arising has become this practice method, part of that is the natural recognition that you naturally recognize the role of humility and integrity and dignity, that it all is natural. No one, there's no like, if when you when you're you start to see how a monastic community is put together with those things, but we in our daily life don't have them, so we have to cultivate the conditions where they will arise more naturally. And again, a lot of us are at times, whether it's sickness or economic disadvantage or just somewhere or another, we have to, we encounter our humility and the need to locate our dignity, but sometimes we can't do it, or we don't trust our dignity. We've had economic defeats in life of one kind or another, and we've actually done quite well with that, but we can't recognize it. We don't feel like we don't trust our own evaluatory process, our own discernment, and so we have to learn to claim that for ourselves. And again, as best I am able, as best I'm able implies that I'm available to learning and be more able in the future. And so it's a locating ourselves in that reflection of these in that way, to meet life on the street of life in a way that would arise naturally in this way. The part of this point of letting go is the surrender. You know, that letting go is a kind of surrender, and the ego, you know, I should have done that better. I could have done that better. And I won't let go of the experience, because if I keep holding on to that experience, it's like somehow I'm going to get to do it again or something. I don't know. We just can't let go of it. We won't surrender. I surrender to what is. I surrender to what is. I surrender. Is there a defeat in it? It's yes. I got defeated by that. But in the defeat, accepting the defeat, we gain our experience from how we did it, so we can do it better in the future and the next thing in a whole different area of our lives. We gain this this we don't have to be defensive, because we can own defeat, so we have that humility. And because once we can accept defeat as part of life, then we're in touch with our inner dignity. So many things I've done a whole day long on just this surrender sequence. It's really quite beautiful to see this. And actually, you can, I don't know if this is available or not. I'm not going to ask that Rich just yet. But anyway, and then, so surrender for myself, what I discovered with working with myself and working with clients, is oftentimes we won't let go. We won't let go because to let go, we have to forgive. We have to forgive ourselves, or we have to forgive another. We have to forgive a parent. We have to forgive our best friend that let us down. We have to forgive something that we have to forgive ourselves for, that we were greedy. So all these different ways that we have to forgive. And we even have to forgive life itself sometimes, that life is like this. We have to forgive, for some of us, God, if God is an inner organizing sense for you. We have to forgive God for setting it up this way. And we don't know what we have to forgive till we start forgiving. And then it arranges itself in the letting go. The letting go. But then in the surrender and in the forgiving, we once again can get awfully tricky. The old ego, that old ego, it really wants to glorify itself because it's afraid, because it doesn't trust humility. It thinks it will collapse with humility. It doesn't believe that there's an inner dignity. How can it rely on that? It may not be there. You know, and it has to learn. It has to be. We just have to hold the hand of the ego as we get through. And to do that holding of the hand, we use everything we've learned in the Dhamma and everything we've learned psychologically and in the street of life. But also, it requires an accountability. Are we really surrendering? Are we really letting go? And so the third of this surrender, forgive, is accountability, that we cultivate accountability. And as we cultivate accountability, it builds up our integrity. So these two match everywhere, these two threes, these two trifectas. For the street of life, you want to live the Dhamma on the street of life. This is the equipment, you know, this is the technology, this is the secret teachings in this way. And it's easily proven for ourselves by just going out and doing it. It doesn't, you're not asked to believe anything. And it all fits in the Four Noble Truths. So it's everything I do fits in the Four Noble Truths. Everything we all do fits in the Four Noble Truths, as far as that matter goes, from my opinion, but it certainly is my experience for myself. So, then I'm now starting to use this new word of personness. As in my own journey, and again, the blessing of being so ill for 8 years that helped with this. I more and more came to recognize the personness where there was still an ego, but the ego was in another relationship to the personness. It was not in the center. It was serving the personness. And I call that personness when the ego is not in the center. And the letting go really serves the personness because it's not organized around the ego in the same way. This feeling of our personness. You each know your own personness, right? You can feel personness. If I just ask you to think that way for a moment, just trust the word. Let me see some heads, a yes or no. Okay, that's good. Mixed thing. There was yes, there was nodding yes, there was this, and there were like, that was great. That was fun. But I am suggesting to you that you can discover a personness. That is not a me and mine, but like a living awareness that's characterized by whatever your life is. But it's a personness. There is individual consciousness, this one awareness that we're all, there's only one awareness that we're all part of, but we're having a personness, a personal experience of that. And that personness is has a very different experience than the egoness of when the egoness is in the center. And we really appreciate the ego. We really appreciate the ego. Really, thank you, ego. Thank you, ego. You make all these decisions. You hold our integrity together. You've kept us from so much more screwing up than we've already done. It would have been much worse if we had not had you going, "No, that's not a good idea." So we very much appreciate it. But as we age into a larger understanding, the value, the good judgment of the ego is kind of been incorporated in. Its ability to compare and evaluate has been incorporated in, so it doesn't have to be so active in the same way. we will fix what we can fix, and we, and but we know that there's a lot we can't fix, so we don't need it to go, oh, you got to fix that, you got to address that, you got to address that. And we don't even listen that much to it anymore anyway in terms of getting us to do something. So more into the being and less into the doing. More into being, less into, this is letting go. Broad, broad, steady, steady, not in a hurry. Letting go as best I am able here and now. But then the integrity that goes, you know, I'm still holding on to this. A lost love, an in-the-world dream that I'm holding on to, wanting a different relationship with my mother, wanting not to have chosen this profession or that profession, or made this financial decision or that financial decision, whatever it may be. I've gone with somebody else's dream that rather than my dream. Let go, let go, let go. We've all done those things. It's in the letting go of the things that we then find the healing we're looking for, the empowerment we're looking for, not in the holding on. So with that as the conclusion of my remarks, my guidance, time for just a few questions before we do our final sit, if there are any questions or comments. One person asked this question. Well, if we let go, what is there? So this is our first question. If I'm saying this correctly, I'll just quote it exactly here. With what do you replace what you have let go of? With what do you replace what you have let go of? Shocking answer to this is contentment. A contented mind. It's amazing. Who would believe it? Not the ego. But a contented mind is what, it's what, that's what I have discovered with people. A contented mind, when you let go, you know, when you, it reaches a certain stage of letting go, the mind's just content in that area. It's content around that experience you had. It's no longer churned up by it anymore. The mind's just contented. It did happen, and you remember it wasn't pleasant, or you were really stupid, or you didn't get what you wanted, but you're contented anyway. It's just part of the storyline. It's not living in you in the same way because you've let go. It left a long time ago. But you have kept it alive and you're wanting. And me too, all of us. So this letting go in that way. So that's the answer to that question. And now, Charlesti, nice to see you again. I may not be saying your name right, but nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, Philip. I had the chance to practice with you and Dana in person at your body's retreat. Wonderful. And it's Charles Lee, like an adverb, Charles, an adjective. Yeah, Charles. I did join a little bit late. Kids had soccer games and stuff like that. It's always nice to have a little bit of Dharma in the background. I guess I just have a reflection as to, from just hearing your recent remarks around ego and around personness. Yes, I just found it very, very interesting because, maybe it's that, I definitely have gotten through or have kind of gone through life with kind of this voice or this ego saying, well, you know, don't do that, they're all going to laugh at you, or don't do that, you know, you're going to get embarrassed, or don't do that, like, that's illegal. and of course, you know, there are certain times where it's correct. But I think, yeah, that person-ness seems to speak to me to some sort of like I can take, I can either, you know, I can take the ego's advice under consideration. And like,
That
yeah, don't do this. This is illegal. It's a pretty good idea to take that
is.
advice.
Yeah, we
But,
don't want to leave home without the ego.
don't do this. Like, they're all going to laugh at you. Like, sometimes, I'll take that under advisement, but I'm going to go ahead and go for it. And it speaks to some sort of, the idea that I have some, maybe even equanimity that I do have some agency, as a person, I have more agency over, this particular body and the circumstances that I'm going through than any one of you have over this body and this particular set of circumstances, but I'm not in complete control either. So it's playing in that area of knowing that I have some agency, knowing that I do, that it does matter what I do,
It
but
is.
that I, but that I'm not also like completely in control of the outcome, and I'm still, that's so hard, so
So,
hard
and
to.
that, so that you have some agency, but you're not in control of the outcome, and they may in fact laugh at you. But and that's why having that inner dignity, being in touch with that inner dignity and the humility, it's okay if they laugh. In fact, it's pretty funny from certain perspectives, if you
What
it,
else?
you get him because you the humility and the integrity really. The humility, dignity, and integrity really can protect you as you start organizing that. That is like the imagine that much of the ego matures into those capacities, and so therefore the ego is this alert, ooh, which we really need when we're young, and we always need it. Don't leave home without it. But its centrality ceases to be so necessary. Many other people have said that about the ego finding a new place. This is not something I've never heard anybody talk about personness before, but the ego losing its centrality, lots of people have said in lots of different ways. I don't want to act like I'm claiming something here. So yeah, so good for you, that recognition.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Barbara.
Yeah, I want to thank you for this incredible experience. And I just had one thing. I've been working for a long time, as you probably know, of trying to let go of fear by feeling it. But I've always been, I will sometimes it'll happen, then the fear will go away, and then it'll come back worse. And what I realized, partly in the walking meditation, is that what's really happening with me is fear of fear. And that, oh my God, fear is destroying my body, it's raising my blood, blah, 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 blah. And that's the relationship I realized, whoa, I need to let go of this. And so for that, I greatly thank you.
Good to hear that. And there is actually on Dharma Wisdom, I don't know if it's on Dharma Ground also, but on Dharma Ground, there is an article of mine about the fear of fear, in which I address that specifically. Is that on?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and that's a great recognition. And this is, by the way, this is how autocrats play on us, is they we become afraid. They're playing our fear of fear is what they play on, and so I don't want to get off on that in any way, but just to know that. So it's debilitating to us as a person, and then it's debilitating to us as a people, this fear of fear in that way. There was a question: can you define a person as? And since I've made it up, I'm not sure. I'm not trying to see if it's in the dictionary or anything, but personess, personness, like any, maybe it would be two N's in it at the end, personness. So person and then ness on the end of it. And by personness, I am meaning the felt sense of our mind, heart, body experience. Without it being centered around an ego view of it, but rather a felt sense experience of it, so that it's not it's not around the judging, comparing, and fixing that the ego does. That the personness does not need that ego. It's personness is there without the ego saying you are a person. Your personness has matured in you. Your personness you already have. And then the ego then is serving that personness rather than creating, oh, I'm a person, but which is absolutely necessary in the first part of life, absolutely necessary. And we always need the ego in this. But the ego has a hard time of letting go. It really has a hard time. But the personness, less so. Because it is kind of always in the now, you know. It's more inclined to being in the now. Okay, let's sit again. Let's stand up for a moment just so we can really get into this sitting. Arriving. Arriving here and now. Bringing mindfulness front and center as a value statement, as a deliberate commitment to relating to life rather than reacting. Feeling the wholesomeness of arriving as a motivation. We're wishing to be present in life. We're aspiring to be present in life in such a way that we can participate, that it reflects our values rather than just being reacting to life. So wholesome. Mindfulness front and center, mindfulness all around, arriving, that wholesomeness of the reflected in our body, in the physical body, so wholesome. The metric is feeling the establishment of the mindful, the immediacy of the moment being known. We are mindful of this moment, whatever's happening. And that's how we know we've arrived. When there's some continuity of that, of our experience, it's knowing the arriving of the experience. It's not commenting on the experience. There is recognition, but not commentary. If you're practicing on your own, you have to do self-guidance, but you don't then need to comment on that experience or on that guidance. You don't have an opinion about it. Just pursue, stay with, persist. That was the word I was looking for. And there arises this feeling of being available. You know you're in the moment. You know you've chosen to be in the moment. There's a kind of delight because you're in the moment. You're here now. So the aliveness, being in the moment means that you have available to clarity of mind, to whatever degree that is there. It means that you have access to intuition, to whatever degree of intuition you have at this moment around this occasion, whatever it is, throughout your street of life experiences. And you are available to your heart, and your heart is available to you. The wholeness of your being is available ever more as we practice. Who would not choose this except out of fear, not trusting, not feeling worthy, all of which are mistakes in perception, misperceptions. And so we're available to life. And it's kind of breathtaking a little. It's a little like, oh, am I really choosing this? And in certain moments in our lives, in certain situations, no matter how long you've practiced, it just doesn't feel safe to be available. And so you're a little removed, or a lot removed, or you disassociate. You do what you need to do to survive intact. But those moments are ever more rare, and for most of us, not that often occurred. So available in a related way from our deepest values. We wish to be available in this felt sense, to feel nature, to feel the beauty of this world in which we live. As our Dhamma develops, we're available to consciously carry suffering without getting neurotic about it. Consciously carry it in a way that we can respond as is appropriate to us in our circumstances. Not perfectly, but in a way that we're not frozen or collapsing in guilt or shame or unworthiness. In the ways that we have privilege, we carry that privilege with responsibility, and we pass forward in whatever ways we can, whatever privilege we have, sharing it as is appropriate. And we recognize the limits of our being available, that we can become available to things that are not so wholesome, because the nature of the mind is it can think of anything, it can start to be curious about anything, imagine doing anything. And therefore, in humility and integrity and with the dignity, We align with that which is uplifting in such a manner that it is both protective of this vulnerability of available, and it uplifts, it is inspiring to the availability. The availability turns in a direction. If we were directionally aligned when we start arriving, here where we are specifically aligned, we move from direction to a point of alignment, a one-pointed alignment. We're sheltered in the Dhamma. We're sheltered in our integrity of love. Sheltered in our practice, uplifted. Not perfectly, but far more than without. Our aligning is always as best I am able. That gives it the integrity, so it's not fantasy. It's genuine and therefore really will serve us, will really protect us. Please, please understand this as best I am able in the coming days. Make it your own exploration. You may find fault with what you've heard. That's good news for you. And there's a point when we recognize we're available and aligned. It becomes familiar. We may come to see it as, oh, this is true mindfulness. This is really the fullness of mindfulness. And it brings a kind of natural arising samadhi, this available aligned. There is a one-pointedness that has naturally arisen. And it's our heart and our mind and our emotions are all one-pointed towards this availableness, this aligned availableness. And we're established in a one-pointed way. We have collected and unified our attention. A spontaneous, naturally arising one-pointedness. It's calm, steady. It's the first ground, the first grounding. We have to be somewhere when we have experience. We're standing somewhere. We're sitting somewhere. This is the first ground from which we receive experience. It will be the ground from which at some point far more subtle things will occur. So much is gained for our practice in really spending time here as best we're able. It's an engaged presence without having objects arise like constantly. An engaged presence in the availableness of that comes from the mindfulness and the alignment. Engaged present that is responsive in its capacity. Feel this, please, for a moment. Insofar as you're able, would you not choose to live your days on the street of life in this way, with the kind of choices that this brings, of having choice as to how you respond to all of the things that occur on the street of life? Would you not choose this? Would you not choose this humility and this dignity and this integrity as best you're able? Would you not choose this? What's in the way of your choosing this. For you to live in this manner, notice what needs to be let go of in any given moment. This moment, but other moments later today, tomorrow. Insofar as you're incorporating this into your practice, what's in the way of your meeting life in this particular way? What needs to be surrendered? What needs to be forgiven? Where is your accountability out of balance? This available, aligned, as best I am able. Is it that you're letting loose, that you're forgetting as best I am able, and therefore you're getting, your ego is contracting, clutching, judging, comparing, fixing, panicking, complaining, because you've lost as best I am able as a quality of mind. Evermore, it can be a bind state, this as best I am able. If you are going to make the street of life your monastery, your where you go to practice, just like you were on a retreat at a meditation center, then it calls for something like this. The dignity that allows you to practice, so empowering, so freeing. And by freeing, I mean you don't have to judge and compare and fix yourself. And you're therefore much more willing to practice, to be being mindful in this way that you've learned in the Dhamma. Much more. There's still discernment. You know, without discernment, you could not have accountability or integrity. There's still discernment. But it's not labeled with that selfing, that contracting, that grasping that comes from the judging, comparing, and fixing. This is easily recognized. It's letting go of what's in the way. That's the next step. That's how you deepen your understanding, is by letting go when things get in the way of meeting life, making the street of life your practice. Sometimes what needs to let go of is very hard to let go of. It's really tough. Ugh. And you may have to persuade yourself. That persuading is your faith speaking, faith based on experience. E pasako, come see for yourself. And you start small and build up. You start with the felt sense and the small things of life, and you build up. But you've got a map. A way to organize, locate yourself. And it applies to all of the four foundations of mindfulness. If this map can be employed for each of them and they become one, the map and these experiences of the Buddhas, pointing us to notice the knowing, the mindfulness meeting all of these aspects that the sense gates create. And, you know, it's the same experiences, whether you're living as a monastic in a monastery or the street of life is your practice arena. Same internal experiences. More intense in some ways in the street of life. More varied, more rushed. That's why people go to a monastery, to simplify, to have rules and guidance that limits. It's the map that we use in the street of life more, because it's happening so fast that we don't get the chances. But it's doable. For the last of this sit, what now is your personal relationship with letting go? Don't try to think it through. Feel it through. What is your felt sense? The motivation around letting go, the opportunity, the resonance, the harmony, whatever that you just, from this perspective, while it's so fresh, the felt sense, it may not be words, you may feel it in your heart, you may feel it in a particular place in the brain or skull, you may feel it in the whole body, you may feel it in the heart, any and all together. as we conclude our time together, to recognize that we have mostly explored this day practicing practice as an attitude, and the immediacy of practice, and manners, skillful means of practice, all in the service of knowing the Dhamma as realization, not concept of the Dhamma, but the Buddha's teachings that liberate as insight. Grateful for our time together. Grateful there is a Sangha of like-minded people. May any benefit that has occurred for us in this day of practice manifest in our own lives and the lives of others, such that others benefit from our practice, and those they interact with benefit from our practice. May we be available as best we're able to continue to practice, utilizing these and other skillful means, bowing to the Dhamma, bowing to the Buddha, bowing in gratitude to both, and bowing to the Sangha in gratitude. May all beings find the path that leads to the end of suffering.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
It's really fun to be with you once again.